Hello and welcome to the Industry Leaders Podcast, where we talk to the leaders of some of the most exciting direct and retail brands and learn the real stories behind their success, their challenges, and their plans for the future. I'm Sarah Cole Boyle, and this podcast is brought to you by More2, the marketing science people. Congratulations are in order for my guest today. Nathan Williams is the newly minted CEO of Mamas and Papas. And although he's new in his role, he has in fact been part of the business for several years. Nathan was part of a team that has been steering the brand through what might just be the turnaround to end all turnarounds. In 2019, Mamas and Papas was sold in a pre-pack administration deal, but the brand is now, just 4 years later, on course to deliver a record-breaking financial year. Nathan, it is great to have you here. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you very much. And thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Yeah, it's not often that you come across a story like what's happened in such a short amount of time. And so I know we'll jump into that in a little bit more detail. But how are you settling into the new job? How does it feel to be CEO?
How am I settling in? I'm settling in really well, I think. How does it feel to be CEO? I think it's something I've worked towards, and I feel, to be first and foremost, I feel quite honoured and privileged to be the CEO of Mamas and Papas. Great history, and you touch upon some of the recent history there. But it's been 41 years. Our founders created a wonderful brand, so to be the custodian and leader of that brand for a period of time is a great honour. I feel excited. I don't feel scary or anything like that. I'm very clear of what we want to do, but really excited actually about the chapter ahead for Mamas and Papas as well.
Oh, fantastic. And could you maybe tell us the story a little bit of what happened in 2019 after you kind of had that administration experience, and what has it taken to get you to where you are now?
So, I mean, I've been in the business 5 years, and I think when I first arrived, I mean, there was clearly a lot going on. There was a lot going on in the market, and the business had gone through quite a lot of change over a number of years. And then clearly in November 2019, it wasn't just us. We did the pre-pack administration, and then Mothercare obviously went into administration this very same week. So the market was quite chaotic, you could say. And it was one of these where the business had to make a significant change to rebalance costs and in line with revenue. So, yeah, it was a major change. And then that was November 19. And then 4 months after that, March 20, obviously COVID. So just as the dust was settling, if you like, from the November 19, we entered COVID. It was a real difficult time for the business. And actually, I mean, I talk about it quite a lot and to people where, you know, COVID allowed us as a business to just pause and recalibrate. That COVID time really afforded us the opportunity to pause and really think about what we wanted to do in light of the market situation, in light of the changing landscape, and in light of obviously the change with COVID. So I mean this in the very right way. It came at quite an opportune time for Mamas and Papas. But whilst there's always things for us to do, I think we took the opportunity really well.
Yeah, and I think being able to spot those opportunities for what they are, even if they seem really difficult and challenging at the time, but to say that actually this is the time to pause, because, I mean, I know for a lot of people that started COVID, it was an enforced break, but it was also a time of panic as well, you know, because nobody knew what was coming. How did you and the senior team, how did you kind of refocus on the things that you thought were going to drive change in the right direction?
Well, there were a few things, actually. We were fortunate. And we are fortunate that we operate in what is a resilient market. We were very lucky. People are always having babies. And I'm not sure whether this was going to be a question before you ask it. No, there was no big baby boom. But people are always having babies. So there is non-discretionary whether to buy a pushchair, a car seat or something for baby to sleep in. So we were fortunate that our digital business really, really came through at that time. We just took the time to, you know, reflect on where did we really think things were going wrong for the brand? How did we think the brand was perceived by customers, by our rivals, if you like, and what's going on in the market? And really think about, well, that's what we thought we looked like. What do we want to be? It's not just what we want to be, but clearly what we stand for as a brand. But what do we want our customers to think of us? We set off really on a journey of and having to answer a number of major questions. And what do we want to stand for? What do we want our customers to see? And then go about it from a retail perspective, from a digital perspective, from a culture perspective. So yeah, it was probably, whilst the shops were closed, it was probably the busiest time that we had really addressing what we wanted to do. And when June, I think it was June the 15th, stores reopened, we made sure that they reopened in a way that reflected what we wanted to be for the future as opposed to what we were. And we spent a lot of time focusing on those things.
Mm. And what were the values that came out? What do you want your customer to see when they look at Mamas and Papas?
Well, if we think about, and this is where we weren't clear before, and I am very clear as a leader, what are the things that are important? And EBITDA is important and revenue and sales are important. But quite often people focus too much on the numbers and the spreadsheets as opposed to, you know, what are the things that go into it? We want to inspire and support parents to be the best parents they can be. The question, I'm unapologetic how often I ask the question to the board or all of our people, where if we really want to inspire and support parents, and it's not about discount, it's not about things like that, but it's in what is a very emotional journey, we have a unique opportunity to create a fantastic connection with a customer. Because if we do that and we do it well, then that breeds loyalty in itself without offering all sorts of discounts. That's short-term loyalty. But the question I ask in the journey of parenting up to about 3 to 4 years of age, in those moments, are we helpful? And if the answer is yes, then great. How do we do it better? And how do we improve that and continue that momentum? And if the answer to that question is no, then the next question is, well, what do we need to do? Because if we're not helpful, then we're not there. So really looking at it like that, as opposed to building spreadsheets, if I open up X amount of stores or my conversion on digital does this, if I spend that, what do I get? We start with those questions and answer those. So yeah, we were very busy and we remain. We still ask those questions every single week and something happens, right? Where did we go wrong and how can we be better to be helpful? So yes, that's a real difference to where we would have been previously.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you touched on earlier that, you know, your kind of digital side really came through during COVID and during the enforced lockdowns. Can you tell me a little bit about how do you get what is an older fashioned traditional kind of retailer up to a position digitally where they can compete with the agile e-commerce first businesses? Because you touched on it earlier, like you're a custodian, you're a heritage brand in a way. Your model is completely different, you know, to somebody who has a website and that's how they interact with their customer. How do you get up to that kind of operating level?
Well, there's a few things in there. And I think if we look at what our customer wants from us, from whether it's a digital journey or whether it's from going into stores. So you asked me about digital. So, you know, parenting, when you find out you're pregnant and you're going to have a baby and then you start looking for push chairs and car seats, it can be quite overwhelming because there is so much choice. You know, there's a lot of technical things to be aware of as well. So we looked at our digital business in a number of different ways. And what I and what we are very clear of as a business is our digital platform is not all about the transaction. Back to my point, are we helpful? We have to think far beyond just a transaction. So we sell push chairs, we sell car seats, we sell furniture, we sell clothing, we sell toys. So customers need different things from those categories. So we looked at it and we put it into three buckets where a website has to inform customers on some of the things they need. It becomes a tool of discovery. So we have to educate, certainly on push chairs. But with the soft goods and furniture, it's about inspiring. And you know, when people look on home, people look for inspiration and mood boards. So our furniture offering has to come across like that. Trying to treat every category the same way will not work because that's not what customer looks at. So, you know, we've made good progress. We continue to question it and look at it. But to inspire, to educate and inform, that's how we look at the website. And we ask ourselves for each of those categories, do we do that and do we do it well? So that was a real change to where we were, whereas previously it was about getting people in. We were there for a while where it was about the transaction and, you know, purely looked at it that way. How can we sell more and improve conversion without answering the right questions? So that's one of the biggest changes, I'd say, that how we look at the digital business beyond a transaction.
Mm. Yeah, I like your approach. It's really simple. And actually, one thing I also really like is the parent-to-be video hub. It's really nice.
Yeah,
really nice. And yeah, it kind of, when you're looking at it, you really don't feel like you're being sold to at all.
Yeah, that's really important. What we do not want is a customer to come into our shop or go onto our website and feel they're being sold things. Mm. You know, buy this, buy that. And if you buy this and buy it, it's, well, what do you need? So it's nice to hear that that's how it comes across. We're not pushing sales on people.
Yeah, no, it's really good. And can you tell me a little bit about your stores as well? Because I know they're your concessions I'm really interested in as well. Can you tell me a little bit about those partners that you work with?
Yeah, sure. So we do. We have 22 of our own stores. And what we've done with those is, if we want to be inspiring and support parents, then we have to look inspiring ourselves. And look, we're not Mothercare. We're not any other brand. We are Mamas and Papas. And we want to be more, you know, premium. And when a customer comes in, they feel warm. So we've made a lot of changes in our stores to reflect that, but also put a little bit of, retailtainment, people call it. We've got some test tracks in stores. You know, we've got a mini cut in half, so you can really try car seats. So it's about the experience as well. So again, you know, what type of pushchair do you want? Right, this is how it feels on different surfaces. This is how a car seat goes. You really engage with the customer in a very different way to just selling them products. So they are hugely important, our standalone stores, and they do very, very well for us. But the concessions, what we have learned, certainly in our sector, it's a very emotional purchase. It's a very expensive purchase. So before committing to it, people want to go and see it, ask questions about it, touch and feel the product. So retail space is very important for us. And we had a couple of concessions with Next. Our oldest concession is about coming up four years old. And when we were in the position to expand, because we got the business on an even keel and could actually start investing in space again, it was geographically, where do we need to be? The concession partner at that point in time was Just Next, and they had some great locations. They were delighted with how our brand looked in their stores, how we drove additional customers, because we're very much a destination retailer. We complemented what they do. And our sales densities are phenomenal when you compare it to theirs. So it was a good partnership. It's grown now where we have 25 concessions with Next. We have 3 now with M&S. I'm sure you've seen the news. And that's been really interesting for us, actually, our M&S concessions, because it is a different customer between the two. And I vividly remember when we were offered space in their Cheshire Oaks, their standalone store, not in the outlet. And I sat in their cafe for about an hour. And I just sat and I watched the people who was walking around the space. And I sat there and I saw lots of mums. I did actually speak to one of the guys there and say, did you get an agency to send a load of mums into the store when I was there? Because there were so many of them. And I rang our retail director, Marcus, and I said, this is going to be great space. They've been hugely successful. So we're delighted. And I think where we talk about partnerships, what I think is hugely important is to recognize where we can add value to them, but they can add value to us. Quite often, people make decisions to shoot back to spreadsheets and numbers, a short-term decision to influence a number immediately without the consideration of the long-term. And all the partnerships we engage in and continue to look at are for the long-term, where we can add value to them, but equally they can add value to us. So yes, we have a number of concessions. They're hugely successful. It allows us to go into geographical space where we're not really present, but where there is the demand in the market. And yeah, they're great partnerships. We're not looking for any other partners on it because they're two major retailers. They're great partners. And I'd like to think they say the same about us.
I'm sure they do. And kind of related to that, so I know you've mentioned before that international expansion is kind of a big focus for you now in the next phase or two. So will concessions be used as a vehicle for you to get into new markets, or are you going to start with standalone stores? What kind of approach are you taking?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's a question we ask ourselves and have been asking ourselves for a while. I think now is the right time for us to really focus on our international expansion. We've, back to the point back in 2019 and early 20, we've corrected the course of the business. I think fixing the core, it sounds like it was very broken. We just lack clarity and direction, really, and leadership, which we've corrected. So we've corrected the course in the core of the business in the UK. We know what the brand stands for, and it's very important for us. We are a brand. And we're very good, you know, with our service proposition, and retail is a great complement to our brand. And whilst there is still space in the UK market for us, what we look at now is, you know, with key partners, the right ones, where are the markets we want to be? How do we want to go into them? And I very much mean this in the right way. We're not a stroller brand. There are some fantastic, we sell some of the big brands. You know, I appreciate the fact that they allow their products in our stores. I think they complement us really well. And I'm delighted to work with some of the key brands. But that whole look and feel, we do nursery. We don't just do pushchairs. So us being represented in the right way as a brand internationally and succeeding, it has to be broader than pushchairs. And I think what we have done in the UK has sparked quite a bit of interest. What I think COVID has taught us, that the nursery market is a resilient market. Lots of people are looking to diversify their businesses into more resilient businesses. Like, that's why Next work with us on the concessions. It's a completely different category. Same for M&S. They don't do hardly anything. They're very strong children's wear retailers, but they don't do nursery. So it adds value to them. So that interest, it's the same in department stores internationally. So we're working with some major partners to not the full concession where it's our own tills, it's our own staff, and it essentially is direct to consumer, but we're just renting space in the stores. We're looking at the shop in shop, which if you could argue is concession light. So taking, you know, 300 to 500 square meters, doing nursery, multi-category in a premium, really nice way. So there is quite a lot of international demand for that. And that's the right model for us to go forward. It represents the brand well, and we add value and the look and feel for some of these international partners we're talking to.
Yeah, brilliant. How are you presenting the brand? I mean, like, are you going to cut a mini in half and put it into a shop in Australia? Are you going with the British identity? Or are you doing something a little bit different? How's it going to look?
That's an interesting question. I think in some markets, certainly more the Asian markets, the whole British heritage brand is important. We tend not to, say, play too much on that. Yes, we're a British brand founded by Italian, very passionate founders, and Blue Gem, our owner currently, is there's a few Italians there, and they're very passionate people. And I think that passion feeds into what we do. So what is important is that we demonstrate as a brand why we are there for parents. In our products, the consideration of the design of our product. It's not just about how it may look fantastic, but if it doesn't fold or it doesn't work very well, it's not very good for consumers. So it's all of the functionality and just getting the look and feel of the brand and playing less on the British heritage. That complements what we are. We don't lean and rely on that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about expansion and kind of turning the business around, but I know that you've also played a big role in the ESG strategy. It's probably not fair to say that you built it from the ground up, because I'm sure there was something there already, but I think probably post-COVID you've had a little bit more headspace to think about it. Could you tell me a little bit about what you do with Oxfam?
Yeah, sure. So the whole ESG piece, I remember when I first arrived in the business, more of them on the product director side, we looked at packaging and it was very much within the product world and what are things that we can do. But the thing that, if I was to be asked, what am I most proud about in terms of where we are as a business? The question I asked ourselves and challenged us with was, profit and record-breaking years, yeah, they're great, you know, we'll have, but then next year could be record-breaking. It's just a moment in time. But for the challenge for us was to make Mamas and Papas a better business, better for customers and better for the planet and better for our colleagues. We did. We pulled a full cross-functional, business cross-functional team together, and they meet quarterly. People from the warehouse, stores, products, HR, customer service, where have I missed out? Marketing, digital, every single part of our business is represented in this working group. And we have four pillars to our ESG, which is about our customer, our community, products and the environment, and our people. So under each one of those, you know, what do we look at? We are incredibly proud to have launched 18 new people policies. We've enhanced a further 16 policies to make mamas and papas a more attractive and a better employer. Under the product piece, one of the things which I was very keen for us to explore and learn was circularity. I mean, for those people who've got children, I mean, I've got three. I vividly remember, certainly with our first, we'd have piles of clothes which they'd seldom wear. And then before you know it, they've grown out. And then, I mean, the top I'm wearing now, I've had for about 2 years. But children's clothing does not last anywhere near as long as that. So I looked around and I thought, well, what do we do on this? Because no one was doing anything. And then if there's a question I want to ask and I can't answer it myself, I'm very happy to go and find people to help us. And I reached out to a gentleman called Mike Barry. I was given his name. And then subsequently, everybody I've spoken to on ESG knows Mike. He's a fantastic guy and we learned so much. He set up Plan A with M&S over 25 years ago now. So I reached out to ASOS. They're a great business in terms of circularity, redesign, reuse and repurpose clothing. So I contacted those. And then reached out to Oxfam. And that was one of my most proudest moments where it took 6 months for us to go through the process and thinking, will we be good enough for Oxfam to partner with? And when I got the email from the guys at Oxfam confirming that they were happy to approve the partnership, I was delighted.
Yeah, amazing.
It is. We've got a great partnership with those guys where customers bring unwanted clothing. We've got boxes in all of our stores. They bring it in, put it in, and then we, on a probably every 2 to 3 months, we send over to Oxfam. And it is, it's great because 0% goes to landfill. I remember when our first delivery went to their recycling warehouse in Batley, Leeds, we sorted through about 30 boxes worth of clothing. And about 83% of the products that were given back from customers was good enough to go out to an Oxfam shop to be sold. I mean, I think that is about double what they normally expect from some of their other partnerships. But it just shows you that the need, if you like, to recycle and get into circularity on children's clothing. It's quite humbling, actually, for us. And we know we're doing the right things when people like Oxfam are as excited about the partnership as we are. And yeah. I talk to those guys and they're just so excited and so are we. And it does, it's great. So 85%, just under, goes out to raise money and help Oxfam support the fantastic work that they do. So only 15% is not good enough for that. Very, 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 very small percent. I think it was about 1% ended up going to be incinerated. So really good. And that really sparked us. And we will be doing much more in the coming months, actually. We'll be announcing something in the next... Where are we now? In the next 2 months, about more circularity on other parts of our business. Secondhand markets, we do service and valets of pushchair, but extending product life is hugely important, not just for our planet, but consumer cost of living, you know, not everything people can access. And we have a role to play on that and allow people to buy things with confidence. So it's a great partnership. We're all very excited. And they're the things that really make you think we're doing the right things. We're making mamas and papas a better business.
I mean, that is fantastic. And I mean, huge congratulations for that. It is such a brilliant initiative. And I think you kind of touched on it lightly there as well, having reusing, repairing products and things. And I know that you have a cot bed that converts into a toddler bed, which I just love the idea about. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, most of our cots and cot beds, some people from a size go for a very small one, but product longevity is important. And we do talk to customers quite a lot about it because a lot of the cotton cot beds, they're good enough to go from 0 to 4 to 5 years. And then what you can do, and I've done it myself with my kids, is then when second child comes, you end up putting it back to the cot. Then again, it goes and it can grow with you as a family. So whilst there is always, certainly in some of our products, you know, recycled products and content can often be quite, there is much for us to learn still because there is about integrity and compliance and safety. So there's a lot of things to learn still, and we are learning those things. But it's about product longevity as well. So it's, you're not constantly consuming products and consumptions. And we're working on a mattress take-back scheme as well on that front. So product life and product extensions are just as important as making products more sustainable from a fabrications.
No, that is brilliant. And can you tell me, what are you most looking forward to over the next, let's say, year or 18 months?
I think what we've, over the last 12 months in particular, we've really spent a lot of time crystallizing our thoughts and our purpose as a business. I've referenced, you know, to inspire and support parents to be the best parents they can be. However that journey goes, the partners we work with, and we're not the experts in everything, but we work with experts that can support. So that's great. But what I'm really excited about and looking forward to is how we drive that through the business. The golden thread that runs through the business and our purpose at the very top, but linking through to values and beliefs. And we did an SMT meeting the first time, I think, in over 10, 15 years, where we got all of the senior leaders of the business together. And when I say senior, you know, our heads of, you know, our senior management team, SMT. And it was great to see them all in the room together. But what I really look forward to now seeing is that group coming together and the purpose and the values and the beliefs filtering through the business. Because we do all that right. And I am a firm believer. I believe we're doing the right things. And I believe in what we're doing. But I believe if we can inspire our colleagues by being clear of what we stand for as a brand, what we want to achieve, being very clear. And I'm very clear. Look, this is my first CEO role. And although I've been in the business 5 years and I know the business well, what's required of me is new. But we're all going on the journey together. It's really exciting. And when we see the culture and people just wanting to do the right things and inspired, that's when you look at it and go, we're doing the right things. And then the numbers come. We do all those things, the results, the performance, and we have bumpy months, we have challenging weeks and months, but overall, the business moves forward. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how we mature over the next 12 months and grow as a business to be better.
Okay, so in terms of, I suppose, any learnings you've had throughout your career, any advice you've been given or any advice you could give to somebody who's maybe, let's say, at their mid-level, you know, maybe they're not senior, but they want to get to that position. And you know, if you're talking to somebody over a coffee casually, what kind of thing would you say to them?
Over the years, I think you grow up in your career, you make lots of decisions and you become technically good at what you do. And I think the real differentiator for people to really progress is, you know, their behaviors and how they come across as a leader. I'm very clear there's a distinct difference between leadership and management. Management, there is a place for, but in senior positions and certainly when you're leading teams, it's about leadership. But the best thing, certainly I've learned in my career, and I was just talking to someone the other week about it, quite informal, and I'm sure you're gathering, I'm not that formal, but it is, I think the biggest thing, and I don't mind sharing, actually, up until a few years ago, self-belief and confidence. They can either boost you and really take you to another level, or they can really hold you back. And quite often, it can become quite crippling, really, in terms of decision-making, if you don't believe in yourself. And someone did say to me, this is a long time ago now, in my merchandising career, that one day, Nathan, if you believe you in yourself, you'd make a great director, because talking about empathy as an example, which is a real required trait for a good leader. But I never believed it. I never believed I could do it. And quite often, and I'm sure we've all sat there in our careers, or certainly most of us have, some might not admit to it, sat there when you watch some people presenting and just go, I wish I was as confident as that. And that very mindset holds you back, because then when you want to try to, and then you, at the last minute, sometimes you go, no, I can't do that. But that whole self-belief thing, and I've gone through it myself. You know, I read a book, and I'm not a great reader, but I read this book, and all of a sudden I was reading it, and I thought, well, I think about that. I don't talk much about it. And I thought, all right, tick. And then I read deeper into the book, and I thought, yeah, I think something, yeah, that's crossed my mind. And then you take those things and go, do you know what? You've read this. Nathan, you should really believe in yourself a bit more. And then you try one thing and then you try something else and you put yourself, you have to be comfortable to be uncomfortable and be go, do you know what? I'm going to do it. What's the worst that'll happen? And then you do that. And I think when you start then believing in yourself and have that confidence, you stop worrying what other people think of you. You stop worrying about, if I do that, will I be seen as doing a good job? And it's not that you go beyond not caring what people think. If you ever thought that, then you'd never be a good leader. But it's not worrying what people think and allowing that to influence you and stop you doing so. A piece of advice I would give anyone who doubts themselves or don't think they can do it, just tell yourself you can. What someone said to me, and this is so important, I really believe in this, because in any aspect of life, it's about balance. Too much of one thing is not good enough, and too little of something else is good. So anything in life, whether it's relationships, money, anything is about a balance. How often do people walk out of the door, out of work, or at the end of the week, and tell themselves and talk to them, oh, that could have been better. Oh, I should have done that. Oh, that didn't go very well. Oh, that presentation didn't quite go as well as I wanted it, and etc. How many of those thoughts do you put through your mind versus, do you know what, that went really well this week. Oh, really pleased. I'm proud of myself for doing that. Oh, yeah, that went well. So for every negative that goes through your mind, you've got to put a positive in as well. But start with the positives. You know, oh, yeah, do you know what? I stood up and I did that presentation. Oh, I was bloody worried, but I did it. Could I have done it better? Anyone can do anything better. What I'm doing today and what I'm doing with mamas and papas, I could do better. But you learn from those things. So, yeah, don't be afraid. And tell yourself, if you tell yourself 5, 10 negative things, you have to tell yourself 10 positives. Otherwise, you look in the car mirror when you're driving home, you look and feel quite down. So I think it's so important. And it really, once you can break through that, I feel very passionately about it because I have been there. Even this week, there's been stuff gone on this week which you go, that was tough. But I don't tell myself we could have done that better and done this, that, and the other and start, you know, beating myself up mentally about it and go, right, we learn from that, Nathan. Well, we won't do that again. And then you look at all of the things that have gone well. You know, when I talk to you about the stuff we are doing as a business and have done, you then reflect and go, do you know what? We're always going forward. So yeah, it's self-belief. You know, if you don't believe in yourself, then, you know, no one will. So that's the piece of advice. 2 bits, believe in yourself. And for every negative you tell yourself, you have to tell yourself a positive. Balance it out and feel good.
Oh, I love it. That is brilliant. Yeah, that's class. I absolutely love that. Thank you so much.
Good. This is so important. And the one thing I'm sure you're detecting there's a lot of one things I'll say. But with everything that we've done, the one thing, and I say this to my guys, yes, there's a lot to do. We've come a long way, but we're having fun doing it. The team are fantastic. The team spirit, everybody's got each other's backs. When one person's feeling down, I see it. I see people stepping in, like, what do you need from me? What can I do to help you? So great team spirit, but it's so important to have fun with it as well. We need that angle in life, don't we?
Yeah, but even as you were talking earlier, getting your senior management team in, I could see you were brightened up, like you were sitting up taller, and like you could really see how much you enjoy the people that you're working with.
Yeah, and the thing, I think leaders really do have to think, what is their real legacy? So when I step away, and whenever that is, what have I left behind me? And if it's all about, you know, quite often you read where good EBITDA success and then CEO walks away and this, that happened, then things start unraveling. It's all through, you know, the business isn't in a great state. But when we walk away as leaders of mamas and papas, and our legacy is want to be looked at as we've made a real positive impact, for our customers and our people. And we get that right, then the rest comes. We talk about record-breaking years. Well, that'll be forgotten next year if next year is better. And if someone else does that and not you, you won't be remembered as someone who delivered the record-breaking year. But for the Oxfam partnerships, our ESG, our concessions, adding value, our people policies and how we make customers' lives better, inspiring support. And I love stories when I hear where we do appointments in stores called Buying for Baby, where a customer can go in, get all the advice and make a purchase. And the number of stories I hear when baby has arrived, they go back into store to show the lady or the guy that's done the person they're buying for baby appointment with them. So back to that emotional connection.
Yeah.
When I hear stories like that and I see all our leaders together and go, do you know what? This is what leadership is about. They're the things people will remember. And yeah, it's what matters. It's what your values are and where you derive your satisfaction, which I go back to my point. If you just look at the numbers and a week that's down to plan, then if that's all you look at, then you're not going to feel good. But if you look at it and go, but we had 2 customers came into our stores this week and showed that the store staff the baby, you go, that's fine. That'll do for me.
Yeah, you're doing something right.
So the legacy we leave behind, it's so important to leave a good, long-lasting, positive impact. So that's the job of a leader and the leadership team.
Brilliant. Well, Nathan, I think that is a perfect note to end it on. Thank you so much. Really, that was eye-opening. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a nice way to spend a Friday afternoon.
Good, good. That was Nathan Williams, CEO of Mamas and Papas. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Industry Leaders Podcast. And don't forget that you can catch up on all of our previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts. For now, though, that's it from me. So until next time, take care and bye-bye.